I'm Brian McCreath, and I'm at Symphony Hall with Christian Zacharias, who's back here after a few years. And Christian, it's really great to have you back. I love the programs that you do, so thanks for a little bit of your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's always a pleasure. And I think they also appreciate it because I'm bringing this kind of, yeah, this time it's autumnal, autumnal German music, you know. It's the best. And it, funnily enough, it's so rarely done. I mean, the Brahms serenades by the big shots, it's, we'd rather do the symphonies or the other big stuff, you know. And the Konzertstück, I just checked with the library, hasn't been done since 1966.
And that was at Tanglewood, here at the Hall, since 1902.
Aha, so you're that. And then you see the names. And there are, Serkin, of course, played it. He was one of the few who played it. And Harold Bauer did it a lot. That was the one probably in the 1902 area. And I just checked also with the library. There's another a brother or sister work by Schumann, the last Konzertstück in D major, which is actually his last composed piece. Never done.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, of course, there's something to look forward to.
Well, and here you are. Well, so let's talk about the serenade, because you just mentioned the big orchestras often don't do these pieces. But and we have this way of saying, well, the serenades were these pieces that Brahms wrote while he was figuring out how to write a symphony. But tell me what the serenade number two is by itself. Don't worry about what was coming later. What are the rewards of this serenade all on its own?
The thing is, it is actually, I think it's almost better than his, I mean, not his first symphony, you are not allowed to say things like this, but it is an incredible achievement because it's perfect in its way. And I think he figured out, coming from Schubert and composers like that, a bit of Schumann, a bit of Mendelssohn, and he really knew what winds and smaller groups can do together. And the fact, I mean, this is almost unique, to have only the violas and the celli and the bassi playing, no violins. So he did not want that brilliance of a first and second violin group, you know. And that he was only 22, I don't know how old he was, very young in Detmold in Germany. And he was in a wonderful, positive mood. Still, he has this melancholy about him, this kind of looking back sadness already in his youth. But it still is aspiring to something. It's almost in love with life, maybe with somebody. It's really a very, very touching, and it touches me still more than the first serenade. First serenade is a big D major piece, more movements, a bit in the old tradition, Mozart, even Beethoven. So, and this is a special piece. I think it's as fantastic as the sextets he wrote also when he was young, his piano pieces at that time. It is a masterpiece, and I'm always the one who does it, and not because nobody wants to do it, but because I want to present it, because it is so touching and so unique in what it expresses.
So when you have a program that's Brahms along with Schumann, there's this historical context of their lives intertwining. And you, as you say, this serenade written when Brahms was very young, he had just met Schumann. How much does their relationship, does their friendship matter when you are on the podium, when you're actually doing the music? How much does that knowledge and that dynamic filter in?
Now, yeah, this time it filters in even into the program, because I play a Konzertstück, which is not as late as the piece he wrote when he met Brahms, but it has the music in itself which influenced Brahms and which Brahms heard. And Brahms wanted to go and see Schumann in his last years. He went there, the young Brahms, and of course it must have been, probably inspiring, but also shocking, because he, to see this man in a asylum, I mean, to be ill and to lose everything he had in his life, and still there were these moments of genius and invention, like the last pieces. I mean, the violin concerto, this other Konzertstück, the Gesänge der Frühe, the late Schumann. There are some places which are absolutely unique in music history, and so to show now two pieces, a chamber piece by Brahms and then a chamber concerto by Schumann, because you could say, I mean, there's no piece on earth I know which starts, I mean, like a piano concerto, which starts with one solo cello and one clarinet together with the piano playing a hidden melody, and then the horn comes in, and then the violas give a little harmony, and so it comes out of nothing and gets into very big orchestral stuff like the Rhenish Symphony and like the best symphonies of Schumann. And there you have the scope, the whole scope. And also, again, the question, why is it not done? That's also linking it to Brahms' Serenade. It's a piece that has been lost in translation or in transition or whatever. And I'm very happy now. I'm, of course, in a position I can lead the orchestra. I can get everything together in a way that we are focused together on this enormous chamber music. Again, it's enormous chamber music, although it is also orchestral music. So I think it's better than being accompanied by somebody and a conductor who kind of helps you. No, we have to build it up together. We have to speak to each other together. And as I said, when I start this piece, I'm accompanying the clarinet, I'm accompanying the horn, and all of a sudden I take over, and maybe now they accompany me. So this is this fantastic mix of give and take and receive, you know.
So I was just going to ask whether this was a piece that was harder to do as a conductor, pianist, but what you're saying is it's actually better this way.
It is better this way, but it is also quite hard. And I know there are some people who have been playing and conducting, not too many, and even now very good conductors have played, but I don't know anybody who does the Schumann pieces and the Schumann concerto from the keyboard. So there I seem to be the only one at the moment. I think in the old times there was one who lives now in Hungary. But but the rewards are there, and I think I can manage. I mean, I have now so much experience, I can manage this kind of freedom which also reigns in Schumann. It's crazy music, it's romantic rubato music. So of course they have to know what we are doing. When I slow down, when I speed up, but this is a wonderful, I mean, they have these fantastic chamber groups. They are one of the great orchestras, and they are musicians, and that's why it works. I
mean. Absolutely. The thing about Brahms and Schumann both is that they both wrote a lot, and Brahms even late into his life, a lot of small-scale piano works. Now, as a pianist, I kind of wonder, do those smaller works, the collection of movements, I mean, like Papillon or anything like that, do these help you understand what's going on in the larger forms that Schumann put together, and maybe Brahms as well?
Yeah, I think they, yeah, a little bit. But I think the problem is if you come too much from the small forms and these little moments of genius, and it can be 10 bars or 15 bars, that doesn't help you to grasp the shape of a bigger piece. And Schumann's symphonies are bigger pieces, and they are constructions even over four movements with one idea. So there he developed very much from... the sad thing is that many people still think, oh, the young Schumann with all this Carnaval and Kreisleriani, that's the real genius and the leader. So, and then when he started writing with orchestra, it's okay, you know, and he can't orchestrate and all that. Then you hear all these prejudices, which the first people writing about him have said, and they repeat it and repeat it. And of course, the composers like Mahler and conductors like, I don't want to talk about colleagues, but they change a bit here and they do this, and I can do this better, and Schumann doesn't know how. And I believe firmly, A, in the bigger form of Schumann, in his genius writing symphonies. I think they are the most original symphonies after Beethoven. And there are things to write scherzos with two trios. He was the first one who wrote two trios in a scherzo, and even with different meters. So he is really incredibly inventive. And then his orchestration, you just have to balance it. I mean, you have to work with the orchestra and maybe even ask for a smaller orchestra, not 18 first violins, but maybe 12 or even 10, so that the woodwinds and the strings work. And all of a sudden, it sounds like wonderful orchestration, and it sounds like one of the geniuses for orchestral music. And that's what, again, here, when I started, I realized immediately they had played it really big, enormous. And then slowly, maybe, hey, Mendelssohn was next to Schumann. Maybe Schubert was there too. So maybe we shouldn't think of Wagner and Tchaikovsky, but of where this music comes from. And I think we'll be there. And this orchestra is picking up very quickly. And some musicians already told me they love the tempi and they love this kind of speaking quality of fluency, you know, and not pretending to be important.
The Fourth Symphony of his works.
It's actually his first, which we also shouldn't do. It's not his last message.
But that's the thing about it. He began it, but then later he did all these revisions. So it's sort of the younger and the older Schumann.
And I like his old version. I'm not like many Baroque people now or original people who play original instruments even think, the young version. No, he knew what he did. Schumann knew why he took it up again. He revised it. And it was not because, like in Bruckner's case, that all his friends said, you can't do that, so you have to change this. No, nobody told him this. It was himself. He said, I will look at this work, and I think the second version is masterly revised, and it's the one I will always do.
Is it, of the four, the hardest to really make clear as you're making the music? I mean, the second has its discrete movements. The third, of course, has five movements, but they're still all of individual characters. As a continuous piece,
I don't think so. I think actually, okay, maybe I'm wrong, but for me it was almost the easiest because it's so incredibly clear. The diction and what he invents there, it's between Baroque and classic and Mendelssohn and Schumann. And it's whereas the Rheinische Symphony, for example, is very... double layered, triple layered, and it is more complicated. Also, the characters of the pieces. Also, the first, the Spring Symphony, I find much more tricky to do. So, one and three, I find much more tricky, and two and four, for me, are much clearer in its diction and in two. I did actually in Tanglewood. I remember very well. It was a lovely, lovely time. And now I'm happy to do four because, as I said, and it should be presented like this. A clear offering with wonderful deep moments, of course. The beginning of the last movement is unique, even for Schumann and for the whole history of music making.
One of the things is you can't escape with Robert Schumann's music, the story of his life and his mental health. And do you feel in any way that what we hope is a better understanding of mental health problems helps us to understand Schumann a little bit better and maybe his music a little bit better now?
You know, I very rarely hear this in his music. I mean, okay, there are some pieces, but his masterpieces, I think he transcends whatever he is. He is, of course, but anybody who does art and the highest, almost dangerous quality of art, be it a painter or a writer, is at his limits, and there is you can fall down, and we have people nowadays too who maybe we are a little bit more friendly towards them also in their personality and in their lives, but in the end we should almost forget who was it, who wrote it, what is this piece, and then you have a piece like this, and they are icons of our classical heritage. And who cares whether this guy was mad or not? They are masterpieces. I mean, they transcend everything these persons can do. Sometimes you even think it's not them. You know, they received it. He received it. It was luck that this guy could receive this and write it down.
That's fantastic. That's just great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Christian. It's wonderful to have you back here in the hall. Really love hearing your work. So thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.